Well, good morning, everyone. We are continuing now with the Treatise on White Magic video commentary. We've worked through about 50 pages of the introduction, that is the entire introduction, and found it to be a very deep and sustaining fundamental document. And now we actually start to enter the rules for white magic. And at the we're on page 51 and commentary 13. At the beginning of every one of these rules, the rule is stated, the solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep, communicates with his reflection. The solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep communicates with his reflection. Well, you know, there is much ambiguity about this solar angel. It was a human being in a previous Mahamanvantara, a previous solar system. It had to be educated as a solar angel. It seems that a human being educated in that way goes to the star Sirius. At least that's the way it is at this time. These solar angels have returned. They can be active in other planets as well as the Earth, from what I understand. But when the planetary heart is opening, and we can say that the initiation process of our planetary logos is, in a way, the opening of the planetary heart. They are found more active within the economy of the planet, and they did intervene on behalf of the of humanity, which was sorely delayed through mistakes occurring on the moon chain. On what plane is the solar angel found? Well, you know, when we actually look here at one of these compiled charts, we find the solar angel, let's see, copy open, and wonder how big I can make this. Maybe here? No. All right, well, I'm not going to be able to make it any bigger, I think. For some reason, I don't have the expanding, but here it is. The solar angels are found on the Buddhic plane. In order to reach Sirius, they have to have traveled on the cosmic astral plane, and their consummation is found on the cosmic astral plane. Then they fell again out of the motive of service into the cosmic physical plane, and another fall. Have they gone all the way to the Buddhic plane in their descent, and then another fall would be to fall into the dense physical body of the planetary logos, which would involve either 18 subplanes or 21 subplanes, and they would be associated with the fifth creative hierarchy, which here is referred to as the human personality and the crocodiles. But they are, from a higher perspective, the word Makara can also mean solar angels. And they are members, it seems, of this fifth creative hierarchy. At least they are manifesting in this way. There are other little subtleties, perhaps, that show the solar angel to be located on still higher levels. But at least in this tabulation, we have a major focus on the Buddhic plane. They are love, wisdom in action, in a way. They are hearts of fiery love. They have the second ray. They have the fifth ray strong. The second ray connects them with Buddhi. The fifth ray connects them with the mental plane, whereon they anchor themselves in or about the mental unit of man, and also apparently in the physical brain. the solar angel, you know, it's a huge subject. I think Torkum Saradarian has written an entire book on this, and from my own work, I have found that there are many references which need elucidation scattered throughout the Tibetans' many books. So we'll try to understand the distinction between the solar angel and the angel of the presence. The angel of the presence is found or focuses on the mental plane within the egoic lotus, and I think the way I understand it is a extension of the solar angel, or as much of the solar angel as can be incorporated in the Temple of Solomon, the vehicle of man upon the higher mental plane. So it's the action of the solar angel within the egoic vehicle, and eventually it does reveal the presence itself, which is the monad. DK has told us that we're not at this stage of our development going to be able to understand the solar angel with any degree of clarity. And I, you know, I do understand that, and that it is a huge subject, and it is veiled and veiled again and veiled again. But perhaps we can understand something of the fact that the solar angel has, for the majority of human beings at this time, even from those from the moon chain or from the previous solar system, invested itself in the psychic vehicle on the higher mental plane of human beings. There are some human beings who do not have within their structure the presence of the solar angel. And, you know, they are among the most primitive of our humanity, but their mental unit has been stimulated by the solar angel, and this mental unit has been growing even before individualization took place. And as a result of that stimulation by the solar angel, even though the solar angel of the presence, is not invested in the vehicles of such human beings, they can take individualization and become true members of the human kingdom. Very many mysteries, and one day we human beings, present human beings, after our training on Sirius, maybe 85% of us, will become solar angels operating in a still different way in the next solar system. And their individualization will have more to do with the monadic plane, I think DK tells us. Well, we'll worry about that if and when we get there. Not all of us will take that particular path, but the great bulk of humanity will return as solar angels. And given the fact that solar angels combine in groups to create or manifest as planetary logoi, then it would seem that a lot of human beings will go in that direction to become planetary logoi eventually. Anyway, I wish I could make this just a little... Ah, there we go. Let's take a look. I have the choice. Now I can do that. All right. I don't know how that happened, but it did happen. And there they are, the solar angels, the Agni Shvatas. They are have so many beautiful names, but they are conveyors of love, wisdom, as hearts of fiery love. I have... and maybe should look at, just for a moment, the names of the solar angels, as long as we're getting into this. Yes. Let's see. Solar Angels and general references. Oh my goodness, there are so many. Name, here we are. Names for the Solar Angels, and just get an idea, you know. The Sons of Wisdom, connected therefore with the second aspect, the aggregate of the Ah He, and that is their one of their higher meanings. The Ah He are high beings. Agni Shvatas, a combination of Agni and the air element Vata. The Asuras, really they're Suras. Asura sometimes has a negative connotation, but Asura, well, you know, they represent the sun. Surya is the sun, the builders of the body of the ego, and we have to remember that higher mental matter is involved in that building, even though the solar angels or angel of the presence underlie this this Temple of Solomon, this apparatus, this vehicle on the higher mental plane. Dhyanic Chohanic, Dhyan Chohanic forces, fire Dhyanis. The Dhyanis are those who can meditate profoundly on the higher planes, lords of the flame, or at least representatives of the lords of the flame, because the Kumaras are lords of the flame, but these are solar angels are lesser lords of the flame. Manasa Devas, because they are so profoundly monastic, having been educated to that ex degree on Sirius, so under rays 2 and 5, they have both love and manas. Planetary spirits, I suppose, of which there are a number. Producers of realized consciousness, they make possible self-consciousness in man, that reflected or reflexive Venusian consciousness, and the petals that they help to build out of higher mental matter contain in them the quality of I-ness, which takes the sight back to a directing center. They are the producers of individualization. There are other methods not involving the solar angels, but these solar angels make it possible for a human being to realize itself as distinct. This word Satan does not mean the devil. It's a luminous host which bestowed mind upon animal man. It's not the lower three vehicles, which are lunar and seen as obstructive to the development of consciousness. It represents a very, very high fiery spirits, and the fall of these angels is actually an act of service and is not because of some kind of celestial demotion. And of course, solar angels, sons of mind, but sons of love as well. The great devas of mind, they are, well, Sirius probably has a ray 5 soul and an ultimate ray 2 monad. So the training there will involve a tremendous fifth ray. And we're told that if we are not especially developed along the line of Manas, that the path to Sirius is the one we will take, such as that path destined for Master Jesus and Master Serapis at this time. The great devas of mind, well, compared to what a human being can know, these devas have tremendous scope of knowledge. The vehicles of the divine mind, and they follow out the divine plan and purpose as it is understood by still higher, those on a still higher level of the cosmic planes. In a way, these solar angels are part of a still greater solar angel, which is found on the higher mental cosmic plane. Let's see what else we have here. No, that's it. Well, there are different places where I have other names, but I think you get the idea that these are luminous, loving, brilliant beings who were once human beings in a previous solar system, and an aspect of their service is to help the human being tread a higher path, and in our case, after a long and agonizing delay caused by a planetary failure on the moon chain. But how they associated with the already individualized moon chain egos, we don't know, but we know they did. And how they associated with the egos who were individualized even in the previous solar system, again, we don't know, because the methods of individualization there in the previous solar system and also on the moon chain were different. They did not require solar angelic intervention, but that intervention eventually did come when those beings came to the Earth chain in its fourth round, and they would then be in need of a solar angel to undertake progress with a sufficient rapidity in this, our present chain, and on this, our present globe. There are probably other beautiful names for these great beings, but I think the important thing is to be able to meditate in such a way that we can sense their presence, the angel of the presence, underlying our entire causal structure. Remember that the causal structure is not made exclusively of these angels, because it's possible to have an egoic body without the presence of a solar angel. But I would say that there is an infusion of the presence, the intelligence, the power, the love of the solar angel into the causal body which they were instrumental in helping to design, the egoic lotus which they were instrumental in helping to design. So we have two factors there. We have the vehicle itself made out of higher mental substance, and we have the solar angel underlying that vehicle and fusing its consciousness with the slowly growing higher consciousness of man. Right. Well, that's just a little bit along the line of, you know, background. The solar angel, maybe on the Buddhic plane, collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep, as his extension, the angel of the presence, communicates with his reflection, and man, the personality, is considered his reflection. Maybe the reflection of the solar angel and the correspondence to the spiritual triad. There is a difference between a reflection in which there is inversion and a correspondence in which, let's say that one triangle rests above another without requiring the inversion of the lower triangle. All right, so some basic assumptions and the way of the disciple. This is the first rule, and it's on page 53. So, here we go. Some basic assumptions. All right. And let me get my bracket, the red bracket, which at least makes it possible to write conveniently and rapidly in red. Could be another color, of course. Maybe it should be. Maybe instead of writing in red, well, no, I've written in purple before. Could write in blue. How's that? Let's try that. I wonder if that is a good policy. Okay. Let's try it. See what happens. We are entering upon a course of study wherein the entire tendency will be to throw the student back on himself. Why is that? Because we have to prove these things for ourselves. We have the authority of the Tibetan teacher, who at the time he was writing this was simply known as the Tibetan disciple. It was not understood that he was Master D.K., except perhaps by a few. Certainly Alice Bailey understood that, and some others intuited it, but D.K. asked them if they had intuited it to keep it to themselves. But later, of course, his identity was revealed. And not purposefully, it just happened, and they all made the best of it. So throwing the student back on himself, and thus upon that larger self, the real self, the real self, which has only, in most cases, made its presence felt at rare and highly emotional intervals. And this tells us something, you know, the soul is connected with all the vehicles, but the soul is especially connected with the astral body. So it's possible to go through very, very emotional states where the astral body expands or maybe heightens its vibration in some way or comes into resonance with the soul or with this supervising being we call the angel of the presence. The self, the Buddha counseled self-reliance, but what is this self upon which one is to rely? Actually, the final self knows everything. So we're not just talking about personality reliance, you know, relying upon the powers of your own personality, but relying upon higher aspects of yourself. When the self is known and not simply felt, okay, so remember the very first of the fivefold sequence of initiation is to know. Know, express, reveal, destroy, resurrect. But first to know, not just to feel. And that involves a sight, and it involves the mental plane, the plane of knowing, of knowledge. When the self is known and not simply felt, and when the realization is mental as well as sensory, then truly can the aspirant be prepared for initiation. So some kind of mental focus is necessary if initiation is to take place. It's not enough for us to just feel our way into the presence of the initiator, the illumined mind. The somewhat illumined mind is required. Okay. I would like to point out that I am basing my words upon certain assumptions, which for the sake of clarity, I want to state. So these assumptions, you know, and of course, obviously, you know, you could read this yourself and gain a great deal from it, but this is more for study purposes and, you know, to take into consideration the thoughts of another person, in this case, myself, and see if they can be of any value to you. Of course, you know, when I think back about how I worked with all of this, I read a lot on my own. And I remember a trip which included a visit to the Adyar Library in Wheaton, Illinois, and almost out of reach the Alice Bailey books could be found. You know, there hasn't always been a wholesome relationship between early theosophy and Alice Bailey. So I had to reach very high to find them, and I took them home with me to North Dakota, and I just began to read and realize that this is amazing material. And that was almost 50 years ago, maybe 47 years ago. So oftentimes we have to work on our own. proving our true interest and dedication to these matters on our own, at first without the support of others, although the minute you join the Arcane School, you do receive support, and I did too, joining in 1972, 46 years ago. Well, anyway, he's basing his words on certain assumptions, certain basic assumptions. Right. Firstly, that the student is sincere in his aspiration. We all aspire the rising fire, the redirection of desire to higher objectives, not just now and then, but something we really, really want and desire and even willfully intend to have. And we sustain the quest. The student is sincere in his aspiration and is determined to go forward no matter what may be the reaction upon the lower self. I try to tell this to people who enter the Moria Federation, that the whole personality is going to rebel against this kind of exposure, this kind of discipline, you know. But it's difficult to get that across until it really happens. We've all gone through it, those of who have persisted in this work, and we've discovered, well, you know, whatever's hiding, Pluto will drag it to the surface and throw it up in your inner face, as it were. You'll see it in your consciousness, and you may be appalled. I was appalled. I said, oh, goodness, that can't be part of me. But it was. And one just has to work one's way through it, you know, persisting until one dissipates the obstructions and substitutes for them something much better. Only those, so anyway, going forward, no matter what may be the reaction of the lower self and upon the lower self. And if only our students of esotericism could get this into their minds when they begin and resolve never to quit, because they'll only have to rejoin some similar enterprise at a later date, they would save themselves much time and agony. Only those who can clearly differentiate between the two aspects of their nature, the real self and the illusory self, soul self and the personality self, can work intelligently. So this fundamental discrimination may be found upon the fourth subplane of the mental plane, where we find, what do we find? Okay. Huh. I'm trying to figure out, maybe if I go back here like this, I'll be able to, well, I thought I could, but I can't. It's not allowing me to move as I usually do move. Okay, well, now I'm going to have my arrows. Okay. Right. And here is discrimination on the fourth subplane. And if we go back to this compendium, which Keith Bailey put together, we have discrimination on the fourth subplane. This is a composite chart, which helps us see the various cities that we find on the various levels. So we must be able to discriminate between the energy, customary energy of the personality, and the energy of the soul when it enters. Now, can we do that? You know, so that's up to you to decide whether you really know the difference, whether I really know the difference. It has to be an inner certainty that discriminates and differentiates between the two. Now, this has been expressed in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Quote, experience of the pairs of opposites comes from the inability of the soul to distinguish between the personal self and the Purusha or spirit. Well, you know, spirit, soul, we can consider them one thing. So if we're going to experience pairs of opposites, we haven't really found the Purusha, the spirit. The objective forms exist for the use and experience of the spiritual man, meaning both soul, triad, and monad. That's the spiritual man. By meditation upon this arises the intuitive perception of the spiritual man, the accessing of that which the spiritual man knows, and as we ascend in initiatory potential, identification as the spiritual man. We have to learn who we really are, don't we? And it's not what we so often think. The 48th sutra in the same book gives a statement covering a later stage of this discriminative realization, this discerning quality. Now, remember that on the fourth subplane we have discrimination, and on the third subplane, or the fifth from below, we have discernment, spiritual discernment, being able to detect in the mass of presented perceptions that which is truly spiritual and underlies all the other perceptions which pertain more to the lower worlds. This discerning quality is fostered by a recollected attitude of mind, and recollected, it means a meditative attitude of mind, and by careful attention to the method of a constant review of the life, you know, the evening review, and seeing where we were and seeing what is of the personality and what is of the higher consciousness, and being willing to be disappointed at first and working towards an ever greater proportion of a life lived under the influence of the soul and expressing the soul. So this is the first assumption. We are sincere in our aspiration and determined to go forward no matter what. Well, you know, we can say that, but when the going gets tough, as they say, the tough get going, and we never know, having said that, whether we really will persist or whether we will find those 1,001 excuses for not going forward, or as a favorite word of Alice Bailey, find those alibis for not going forward. Secondly, I'm acting on the assumption that all have lived long enough and battled sufficiently with deterrent forces of life to have enabled them to develop a fairly true sense of values. Taurus, Venus, and the sense of values, which are the kinds of desires and orientations which we cherish and by according to which we live our life. If we, if we don't value the cultivation of the physical body in terms of sports, which is a definite necessary stage, then, and we develop more the aesthetic life, then that type of desire for aesthetic development remains with us, and we guide our life thereby and are not so involved in the kind of athletic activity, which is the main value for many. And if we tend to value the mind and its cultivation more than we do the pleasant and unpleasant, which is presented to us via the emotional body, then our values concern not so much finding emotional comfort as finding mental illumination, and on it goes. We have certain cherished desires and aspirations by which we guide our life. And I think I'll put that in. Certain cherished desires and aspirations by which we, aspiration which we sustain in consciousness and by which we guide our life. I assume that these people, that's us, hopefully, are endeavoring to live as those who know something of the true eternal values of the soul. So it's soul cultivation and not personality success. We are looking for soul cultivation and not personality success or fame or even notoriety, even that. Eternal values of the soul, values which relate to wisdom, which relate to the wisdom which the sight emanating from the soul, from the soul, present to consciousness. These people, we, let us hope, we, they are not to be kept back by any happenings to the personality. Think about that. You're sick, you're unhappy, you're depressed, you're broke, you lose your job, you lose your relationship, whatever. Anything. Go around the houses of the horoscope. You lose. You lose your money. You may not be able to go here and there in the environment as you like. Your home breaks up. Something happens to your children, or you have none, or you get sick. You break up with your partner. You have to pay too much in taxes. you want to go to college, but you can't. You're fired from your career, whatever. You lose your friends. You're plagued by unconscious fears. I've just gone around the houses, and talked about the negativity that can arise there. But they're not to be kept back by any happenings to the personality or by the pressure of time and circumstances. I'm too busy. I'm too tired. There's no time in my life. The classic alibi. Let's see. I have so many important things to do that I cannot study, meditate, or serve. We all know the alibis. Oh, not now, please. Later. I'll do that later. Procrastination. I'll put it off till tomorrow, but I will do it, and so forth. They have wisely learnt that enthusiastic rushing forward. There is no rush, no hurry, and yet there is no time to lose. The rules of the road tell us. An enthusiastic rushing forward and a violent, energetic progress has its drawbacks later. It exhausts the mechanism, and then he explains it to us that if we don't take care of the body, we're going to spend days in bed and lose time. So, part of wisdom, that the enthusiastic rushing forward and a violent energetic progress has its drawbacks, and that a steady, regular, persistent endeavor will carry them further in the long run. Now, he tells us somewhere in the Taurus chapter, I think, that the first-rate type crashes through. But the second-rate type works with no let-up. Let me see if I can find that, because somehow it's important. No leeway. There's only one. It tells us how the second-rate works, and he's on the second ray very much, and though his students have something considerable on the second ray. We're talking about here the will which brings fulfillment, and it's a driving force which relentlessly pushes forward, permitting itself no let up or leeway until the desired goal is reached. And this is different to the first ray expression, which is dynamic and which crashes forward in spite of all obstacles. And the latter does not require the slower method of the steady drive. So crashing forward can be fast, all right, but I'm going to put that in here, you know. This is really somehow important to gauge the manner in which we actually operate. And we may discover in ourselves that steady drive of the second ray rather than smashing through the door. This is Esoteric Astrology, page 624. But assess your manner. Is it consistent? Is it now and then? Is it intermittent? Maybe the third ray has a greater degree of intermittency and working very skillfully when it does work and rapidly, but may hold off from time to time. But the steady drive, the relentless ongoing steadiness of the second ray, and not the huge crashing efforts of the first, which can be fast, but disruptive. So DK is giving us, in a way, the second ray perspective. Spasmodic spurts of effort and temporary pressure peter out into disappointment and a weighty sense of failure, because we're not going to be able to achieve everything all at once. And when we gather and marshal our energies for a great exertion, there will come the time when the energy is gone and we are left feeling quite stranded in our process instead of steadily driving forward. Not that the rabbit is on the first ray, you know, but the rabbit is certainly intermittent. It is the tortoise and not the hare that arrives first at the goal, though both achieve eventually. Well, the intermittency, the sudden bursts and then the regathering of energy and another sudden burst. This is characteristic of the hare, the rabbit in the fable, you know. So, and then they're, you know, comparing humanity to the different animals. There's the grasshopper and there's the ant. Well, summer comes and there's work to be done. The grasshopper's enjoying himself. Winter comes, the grasshopper's out in the cold, and the ant who worked during the summer has a warm place to be. So which are we, and what is our real means of achievement? These seem like simple things, but at the outset we have to estimate the manner in which we will go forward, because we must go forward in time and space. We are not there yet, and it requires work and movement and the forming of new relationships. And we are driven and we drive. So what is our mode? It is the tortoise, not the hare, that achieves first, arrives first at the goal, though both achieve eventually. Okay, now further assumptions DK makes. I assume that those who set themselves seriously to benefit by the instructions in this book are prepared to carry out the simple requirements to read what is thoughtfully written thoughtfully, and to attempt to organize their minds and adhere to the meditation work. So, you know, DK was supervising his students. He often found they really didn't do their meditation work. They didn't do their reading necessarily, and a lot of them didn't submit their papers. And it's hard to imagine that if a master was supervising one's work and was going to respond through a trusted amanuensis, that one would not do all one could. But then you never know until you're under the gun and you're under the pressure. So, in other words, he's saying here, I assume, let's see, do this, I assume you will, I better put it over here. Okay. Huh. Why? Why am I not getting that? All right, I'm going to do this again. Sometimes I just lose the bracket. Okay, so DK is saying here, basically, I assume you will do your work. And, you know, he discovered, of course, that they didn't, not all did. And he said, well, look, you know whether you done your work or not. I'm not going to berate you about this. You know who you are. Have you done your work? Have you not done your work? You know who you are. All right. And all of us have our conscience to help guide us in the use of our time. Will we do the work when a master himself demands that we do the work? Well, it's hard to believe we wouldn't, but such was the case. The will which brings fulfillment demonstrates through the second ray by means of that driving force. Okay. Let's see. Where are we here? Okay. I'm sorry for this slight delay. Page 54 of a treatise on white magic. Is it possible that I went hunting for something that was right in front of me? Okay. All right. No. This will that brings fulfillment, I've already dealt with. And I don't need to deal with it again. Carry out the simple requirements and do their meditation work. And to attempt to carry out the assigned meditation work. And now we just get rid of this business about the will to fulfillment, because we've already dealt with that. All right. Occasionally there are little housekeeping delays here. I'm sorry. And also my mind may simply lapse, and please bear with me. All right, so with these assumptions clearly understood, my words are for those who are seeking to measure up to the need for trained service, and even initiates of the fifth degree are needed, imagine. And in some quantity, they are needed. Well, we're not talking about that, but we are talking about being trained servers in the service of hierarchy and for the sake of humanity, and we're not there yet as really excellent servers that hierarchy can always rely upon. You know, we're told we're something of a hazard before the midway point between the second and third initiations. And DK students had, by and large, had not reached that point between the second and third initiations. They were still initiates mostly of the first degree with maybe the second degree in sight. So we cannot assume that we are further advanced than they. We are still hazards and unreliable to a certain extent and inconstant. And we have to give that up, and that steady drive forward, that will help us do so. I say not, you note, those who measure up. Seeking to measure up, this is what he says. So our motive is all important. And what is your motive? What is my motive? Are we selfishly involved in the desire for self-advancement, or are we on fire with the need to serve? He pretty well assures us that at first we're seeking selfish advancement. And we have to be honest with ourselves whether this is true, and how many years are we allowed to be in the work still seeking selfish advancement. This will to serve has to be very strong. So he says, I say not, you note, those who measure up. Intention and effort are considered by us of prime importance. So your motive, your goal, your vision, and the concrete effort that you apply to make the vision real, they are of prime importance to us and are the two main prerequisites of all disciples. So intention, and effort. This is what we seek to develop along the right lines. These are the two main requisites for disciples, initiates, and masters. Plus the power of persistence. Well, even, you know, we might even say that even, I'm going to do this a little differently. Getting caught up in the, you know. Okay. Let's see if I can get this properly done. Okay. I hope so. No color. Good. And I think what I have to do, sorry for all this sort of housekeeping stuff. I'm just trying to move along, but discover that it's not so easy. So even masters are evaluated. Initiates are evaluated. So even initiates and masters are evaluated by their superiors according to intention and effort. These are the two main requisites for all disciples, initiates, and masters, plus the power to persist. I still persist. The great first ray mantram. First ray mantram. It's found at various places in the books. I still persist. Now, some of them, or one of them at least, gives the mantram, I will persist. But it's not quite as far developed as the statement of fact, I still persist. I will persist tells about something we will do in the future, but I still persist tells about something that we are in process of doing. So in our consideration of these rules, I am not so much interested in their application to the magical work itself as in training the magician and in developing him from the standpoint of his own character. This is very important. So he's not yet teaching us to be practical magicians. You know, that might be the kind of thing that attracts the person to the book, and you say, oh, well, I'm going to learn how to be a magician. You know, there's a lot of glamour around that because it exalts the ego, it exalts the personality, and I am special, I am a magician. He's training our character, however, and it's a book about the control of the astral body. So this is most important. You know, the success in spiritual occultism depends upon the foundation of a good character. Success in just, well, negative occultism, and there is, doesn't need that good character. As a matter of fact, it almost depends upon the development of a selfish character, though there are certain requirements that the leftward veering initiative of the first and second degree must also develop. As DK says, you know, at the second degree, the one who's veering off on the left-hand path will know that he has to maintain a certain type of purity for his own safety, and that's a selfish consideration. Later, we may get down to the application of knowledge to the outer manifestation of world forces. Later, you know, I'm going to ask in the third installment or still later, but not now, because we don't necessarily have the character or even the intelligence to carry out, or the bravery, the courage to carry out magic in the outer world. But now our objective is something different. I seek to interest the minds and brains. How do you interest a brain? Well, you keep it in alignment with the mind, right? And therefore, the lower self, mind, soul, mind, brain, of students in the higher self. So, what are we interested in? The world? The flesh? The devil? Or the higher self? our mind, what's it drawn to? Our brain, what does it hold of the content of the mind? That which is directed towards the higher self? Hopefully so. Higher self, our soul, the type of consciousness we have on the higher mental plane. Thereby keying up their mental interests so that sufficient impetus is generated to enable them to go forward. It takes a certain amount of energy to really go forward spiritually. So DK is strengthening our spirituality, our ability really to move forward on the right-hand path. Well, right-hand path. That leads to further initiatory training in relation to Sirius. This is what he's trying to do. And you might say, well, I'm interested in these things, but how interested? Interested enough to drive and drive and drive forward into greater light, into greater love and greater willingness to sacrifice. Do we have that kind of incentive within us, driving us forward? Well, everyone will have to figure that out according to his own abilities and internal sight of his own character. Also, let it not be forgotten that once the magic of the soul is grasped by the personality, that soul steadily dominates. That is our soul or angel, right? Angel of the presence. And can be trusted to carry forward the training of the man to fruition. So once we really begin to value the soul, you know, once we value the inner higher self, the self will work in and through us. So it will carry, you know, we're being trained right now, not just by the master, not only by our teachers. We're being trained internally by our own soul in and through. Will still work. Once we value the self, the self will work in and through us. That's what it is. Okay. So it will work in an unhampered way, unhampered, as you necessarily are by thoughts of time and space. The soul has overcome, those higher beings working within us have overcome the illusion of time and space. I mean, there are always higher and higher illusions, and time and space are illusions, but they are persistent, and the great breath is the great archetype of time, and it is an infinite eternal factor. Anyway, these great beings work through us unhampered by the thoughts of time and space and by an ignorance of the past career of the soul concerned. That is the human soul. The solar, let's say, angel of the presence knows the past several incarnations of the soul in incarnation or the disciple, and how those past incarnations are affecting the present one. And we might say the soul on its own plane, can also see ahead a few incarnations long enough to, with sufficient acuity, to know what a man must do in order to progress along the right path and fulfill the destiny which already exists. It should also be borne in mind when dealing with individuals that the work is twofold. Because we're getting close to the point where we're going to stop. Okay. The work is twofold: to teach them how to link up the personal lower self with the overshadowing soul, so that in the physical brain there is an assured consciousness as to the reality of that divine fact. Is the soul on its own plane a reality to you, to me? So how practical are we in realizing the factual nature of the soul through our meditation process? This knowledge renders the hitherto assumed reality of the three worlds futile to attract and hold, and is the first step out of the fourth into the fifth kingdom. We value the soul, the higher power, more than the three lower worlds and their previous attractions. Now, this is the twofoldness of the work. I guess we'll just look at this and then we'll call it a halt. To give such practical instruction as will enable the aspirant to understand his own nature. And, you know, most people are very far from really understanding their own nature, and this involves some knowledge of the teaching of the past as to the constitution of man and an appreciation of the interpretations of modern Eastern and Western investigators. So, you know, what are we really in our personality nature, in our soul nature, and in the general energy system of man? Control the forces of his own nature and learn something of the forces with which he is surrounded and be able to direct them correctly, and then enable him so to unfold his latent powers that he can deal with his own specific problems. We have to stand at our own feet here, handle his own life, solve his own difficulties, and become so strong and poised in spirit that he forces recognition of his fitness to be recognized as a worker in the plan of evolution. I'm reminding Master Moria saying, make yourself indispensable. Well, at least make yourself useful. When I had my interview with Mary Bailey long ago, she said her husband Foster said, at least let me be useful. So may that be so for all of us. So he forces recognition of his fitness to be recognized as a worker in the plan of evolution, as a white magician, and as one of that band of consecrated disciples whom we call the hierarchy of our planet. And note that the members of the hierarchy are also disciples. Well, we'll maybe quickly review that when we come back, but right now, let us say that this will be the end of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 13, and we began on page, I remember, 51, and we're here on page 56, and the next time, beginning of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 14, beginning on page 56. It's a wonderful book. I'm realizing or re-realizing again how wonderful it is and why it is foundational and why these lessons went out right after Light on the Path as part of the Arcane School curriculum, which Master DK did not devise, but which he approved. Alice Bailey was in training with her own teacher, Master KH, through her headship of this esoteric school to do future work. And we always have to remember that whatever we're passing through in terms of training is training for future possibilities, and those possibilities for still more distant possibilities. We're always in training. We're always moving forward. We're always trying to understand, but not so much that we stop moving. You know, it's possible to become so aware of things and accumulate such knowledge about things that one doesn't move. This is a second ray liability, and hopefully we can avoid that. Okay, friends, thank you very much for attending this. Whenever you are and whatever year it's in, and we will go forward with number 14. But Anyway, we've just worked on the need to understand the work required as an individual. All very practical. It's a wonderfully practical book. It's just a question, do we do it? Do we follow the instructions? Do we follow out the clear instructions given by the master? Hopefully we do, because if we don't, it's like having medicine in the medicine cabinet and not taking it when you need it, Okay, we'll be back. Lots of love. Take care and study hard, meditate well, and engage in your service. That's the triangle we have to uphold: meditation, study, and service. Bye-bye.